welcome to another broadcast of When Worlds Collide here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, American Free Press national writer. I'm in D.C. these days covering the release of a major report by the Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Veterans. That's coming out in the upcoming print edition of AFP online. It's AmericanFreePress.net. And for subscription and other information, you can go to 888-699-NEWS. That is, call 888-699-NEWS. You can get 16 weeks for $17.76, 19 weeks for $24, lots of good deals. We have an online subscription as well. Anyway, today we're going to have Brian David Anderson on after the first break. He's no relation, but he's got arguably the most intriguing and thought-provoking insights into the demise of JFK, which is 45 years ago this coming Saturday, that I've ever heard. I've read very carefully his book, My God, I'm Hit, Investigating the Kennedy Incident on Elm Street from the Diagonal. And My God, I'm Hit are purportedly the last four words that JFK said in his loud, clear Boston accent as President of the United States, as heard by one of the writers, a Secret Service man, Mr. Kellerman, in the presidential limousine that day. And throughout this entire two-hour show, we're going to take this apart a little bit. And to some people, this is a worn-out topic, something that's been done so many times, it's like a 30-year-old pair of socks. You just can't do anything with it anymore. And I wholeheartedly disagree. I would encourage listeners to listen very closely today. You're going to hear things you've never heard before on this, and it's not your garden variety summation like you get when you go to the Dallas Sixth Floor Depository Museum. And there you get this hodgepodge of theories of Castro was involved and the mob was involved. The mob and Castro were involved, and all sorts of whodunits, which is important. Whodunit naturally is what ultimately we want to know, but the howdunit and the why are equally important parts of the puzzle, and this book gets a lot into that how and why. And it's very interesting if you actually sit back and deprogram yourself from what we've been told over the last 45 years, which is, of course, the common psychological technique of word association. You hear the word Kennedy, you think assassination. You hear the word conspiracy, you think theory. That's done, so every conspiracy is thought of as a theory, as if to say that no conspiracy can be a factual one. Well, we've had conspiracy theories, actual conspiracy theories on JFK, but somehow, some way, something happened on that day that was a conspiracy fact. Not all conspiracies are theories. And not all things are what they appear to be. And that really says sort of the core description of this book. It's about an event that really probably, very likely, was not what it appeared to be. And we're going to take that apart and look at that today very, very carefully. This has been promoted somewhat as a special broadcast. I've always wanted to deal with this issue, but I always came up with the same old kind of worn-out lone nut assassinations with a old Italian carbine and or maybe the triangulation of gunfire and the infamous grassy knoll where I've been. And it's a rather unassuming kind of place, actually, in person. But we'll be right back with Brian David Anderson to get into this in depth. Stay tuned, and we'll see you after these messages.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest. Is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40. And by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms. And they do not go away. Take Super Beta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Super Beta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, call 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848. With Super Beta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the Super Beta Prostate banner to learn more about the product.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johnglia.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johnglia.com.
And now we return to When Worlds Collide. We welcome to the show Brian David Anderson, author of My God, I'm Hit, a unique and very thought-provoking and intriguing insight into the events of November 22nd, 1963, 45 years ago this coming Saturday. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you. That was a great introduction there.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, you know, one of the things that struck me, I remember when I was offering a few comments at a Dallas forum in November of 07, I don't remember who handed me your book, and it was already signed. And I thought, well, how nice is this? And it says, to Mark, best wishes from you. And I had just made a comment because I was in Dallas in that late date on 07. And I talked a little bit about how the media treats the Kennedy thing, and I'm sure we'll get another little dose of it here in a few days, as the never-ending story where there's never going to be even a hint of a resolution. It's always, isn't it too bad what happened? Oh, hum-de-dum-de-dum. Well, that was then, this is now, let's move forward. And moving forward does not seem to ever include any uniquely or genuinely new insights into what's going on. I no longer had said those words about the media's never-ending stories, with JFK's demise being one of them. I just got done talking, and somebody hands me this book, and I thought, well, this is a potential antidote to the never-ending story that goes nowhere.
Yes, because I believe it was the conference. It was a tax-related conference in Dallas.
Right. Were you there? Was that it?
No, I was not. What I did is I sent each speaker a free copy of the book.
Oh, what a great idea. It definitely was a good thing to do. Now, I've read it backwards and forwards. It's more dog-eared than just about any book I have.
Well, thank you very much. That is a great compliment.
Well, I'll tell you what I found interesting, and this is what relates to me. There's two kinds of reasoning. I remember taking a philosophy class, deductive and inductive reasoning. Inductive reasoning is where you look at all the details and you draw a conclusion. But deduction, which is what Sherlock Holmes did, he deduced, is where you use a little bit of gut instinct and a little bit of common sense, and you look at it through a certain lens, and then you see where the facts fit in, as opposed to tedious way, gathering just all sorts of seemingly disconnected things, throwing them in a pile and expecting to come up with something. And what I see here is some very good deductive reasoning. It's a little bit of both. Granted, you need both, but it's a deduction based on your argument, and if I may sum it up, it is, if you want to solve this, why do you assume automatically what you've been told and that it was a not just a rifle-fire assassination, but a rifle-fire lone gunman assassination? And even if there are multi-gunmen or one gunman, why do you assume what you've been told, that one way or another, conspiracy or lone gunman, that this was just a straight-ahead assassination? Do you know that? You know, almost as if to talk to the general public. Do you know that, or is that just what you've been told? And the answer is, of course, nobody knows anything. They just know what they've been told. And I know as a journalist, I try very hard to put my prejudices aside if I can and just let the information roll on forward. Free inquiry is what I'm all about. It doesn't matter whether I agree with it or not necessarily. It's just a matter of free inquiry, and this is really the magnum opus of free inquiry into what went on that day. Now, I guess we radio time still goes by pretty quick, but I guess just to give a little background, when did you first know, or what tipped you off that this may not have been a textbook assassination at all, and that this, in fact, could very well be what you say it is, and that's a abdication by fake assassination?
Well, it happened on November 22nd, 1963. It was in a subliminal type of manner. It wasn't really right in my face, but I was in the fifth grade at St. Luke's Catholic School in the suburb of Irving of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And my older brother was also in the seventh grade, and my father worked in downtown Dallas. He saw the limousine pass his work. He was up on the seventh floor and looked on Commerce Street, and as it made its right turn onto Houston and onto Elm, is that he saw Kennedy pass by him. My older brother begged my father to allow him to go to Dealey Plaza, of all things, because he looked at the route and et cetera. And my father was an ardent Republican, very anti-Kennedy, and also a big thing, you don't leave the school. And so he said no. And then it was interesting, the morning on November 22nd, my father left for work, and he said, I don't want my sons going to Dealey Plaza because I don't want anybody to take a pot shot at him.
Oh.
Yeah, and so then everything all occurred, we were being taught by Catholic nuns, and they immediately then pulled everybody off the playground. We were on the playground at the time, and then we came in just moments after it occurred, and we started listening to the radio programs, and they would just switch around to every various radio programs. And so we listened for the next couple of hours. We had no school whatsoever. We just strictly listened to the radio reports.
Wow.
We were listening to history right there. And I mean, it was just totally amazing.
An unforgettable school lesson, yes.
And so then we hadn't even been released from school yet. We were released at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I believe it was 3 or 4. And they had already had the information on Oswald.
Yes.
And they were already releasing it. And so now my brother and I walk home, and so what did they announce on the radio? That Oswald lived at the 2600 block on West 5th Street in Irving. My family lived on the 1500 block of West 5th Street in Irving. Now, of course, we had never seen each other. I mean, we'd never seen Oswald but at that distance. But, I mean, here it was bizarre. We're walking home. My brother was in third grade. I was in the fifth. My brother was going to a junior high school. And so my younger brother and I walk home. And, you know, it's really kind of, you know, you don't know really what's going on. And I remember somewhat of like the fear, but there was like this intuitive thing is like, you know, this just doesn't feel right. And so walking home, and then we went, opened our door. And my father would never come home early whatsoever from work. He never would come home. And interestingly, again, one of the facts is that they opened up Elm Street, believe it or not. There was not made into a crime scene. My father drove down Elm Street on November 22nd, home from early from work, and we come home, and there he is laid out crying because, again, of the comments that he made that morning before, I mean, the morning of it.
Yeah.
And so that was, I mean, you talk about a real, I mean, here we are, we're listening for 2 hours, you know, all the details, and they finally come on and say the president's dead, and then we listen to the whole thing that they had picked up Oswald, they had picked him up on West, you know, he lived in West Fifth Street, we're walking home to West Fifth Street, you come home and you see your father laid out crying. I mean, this wasn't a Leave It to Beaver day, you know that?
Yeah.
Or, you know, family ties, nah. It just, you know, didn't fit into that type of day.
Your idyllic family life had been shifted a bit here. Yes, it's you're right in the shadow of this thing, and your gut don't feel right about it, but go on.
Yeah, so that's where, again, it was like I just, you know, didn't go there. And then my mother and I were watching the transfer of Oswald from the Dallas County Jail or the Dallas Jail to the county jail. And we watched on live television Oswald being supposedly shot by Ruby, watched live on TV. So, I mean, that was the whole, and then we're watching the funerals. I mean, watching all the, and we were just living, you know, this history. And so, again, things weren't just feeling right. The next incident that occurred for me was then the Warren Commission report came out. And my brother and my father, well, they were really into it, you know, and it was a big, thick thing. And I was still, we were all at the dinner table. And here was this book sitting at the dinner table. And I picked it up. I held it in my hands. I kind of stroked it. And I laid it back down. I said, this is the biggest pack of lies that's ever been produced. And my father and my brother went, you know, they went crazy that, hey, you haven't read this, you know. And I just said, you know, I'd already heard enough of the facts and about the Warren Commission, and I just said, and that's when I was then, at that time, I was a sophomore in high school. By that time, 4 years took for the Warren Commission to do all their thing, to come out, to produce, so from the fifth grade to my sophomore year. And, of course, we were hearing all the things, watching the magazines, Life magazine coming out with their pictures of the Zapruder film and all that type of thing.
Yeah, and, so begins the fusillade of propaganda.
Right. So, again, I was already at a very young age saying I was just questioning, and I did for many, many years. The next major step, and then I had a lot of other incidents that occurred. There was a lot of weird things that occurred. My mother's best friend was having an affair with a Dallas reporter at the morning news, and he saw Ruby at the Dallas Morning News watching the entire incident on Elm Street with binoculars. Another friend of my mother's was one of the nurses that worked on Connolly. I mean, it just went on. Then we moved away from that house on West Fifth Street. We went to Glen Valley. Our neighbor two doors down was Charles Rufus Baxter, who was the rotating surgeon on Kennedy. And so just all these things. I didn't.
Yeah, you're surrounded by people involved. You're in the shadow of the events. You have your father and a sibling who are heavily involved. They don't share your skepticism, at least not initially.
Right.
But fast forward a little bit, Brian. All of this coalesced into your, if you will, sort of angular view of this
Another key incident, though, that was built up before I wrote this book and happened about 15, 20 years ago. And there was a Hollywood reporter by the name of Mary Alice. Do we have time or do we have to wait to the next
thing? We got a little message coming up. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Right after these messages, stay tuned for much more on the JFK thing with another totally important point of view. Stay tuned.
Cartivite is probably the most misunderstood supplement today. Cartivite is packed full of vitamins at cell level to help your whole body function like it used to. Today's diet is lacking in the trace minerals and nutrients our body needs to maintain our good health. Get the toxins and heavy metals out and allow your body to do the job God intended. Made for the heart, Cartivite helps in so many other ways. So order your 4-month special of either the capsules or tincture for just $125 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. That toll-free number, 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite, circulation for life.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
The headlines are clear. The worldwide economic collapse is here. The military is being positioned for martial law. The mark of the beast is at hand. Governments are calling for a new world cashless economic system. Having a long-term food solution is your only hope to stay free. Now, Survivalist Seeds introduces their Escape the Beast Kit. 24 varieties of all-natural, non-genetically modified heirloom seeds. For true patriots and homesteaders wanting food insurance. That's over 5 pounds of rare historic seeds for a penny per seed. 15,000 seeds that will feed a family healthy food for 7 years. Big John Lipscomb, host of Don't Tread on Me, is including an instructional DVD that will teach you how to earn big money selling the produce from his incredible heirloom seeds back to him, restaurants, and small delis. Don't buy from copycats. Their fancy packaging is not free. Order today before it's too late. SurvivalistSeeds.com. That's SurvivalistSeeds.com. A long-term food solution.
We now return to When Worlds Collide here on RBN. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, and Brian David Anderson is our special guest for this very special broadcast today about a totally different look at the JFK demise. We use the word demise here because, yes, we're questioning, get this, whether he was even actually assassinated as we were told. And this is outlined in his book, My God, I'm Hit, Investigating the Kennedy Incident on Elm Street from the Diagonal. It took place, of course, 45 years ago this coming Saturday, November 22nd, on Elm Street in Dallas, the real nightmare on Elm Street, as I call it. And as you mentioned, Brian, you were kind of combing through your connections, how you lived in the shadow of people that were involved somehow, some way, in the overall events of November 22nd, 1963, and that you lived right there in Dallas when it happened. You were in grade school. And we've outlined that. You were adding one more thing before the break. If you would, just briefly add that so we can get on to the meat of this. We do have a short segment now, then a break, and then a longer segment. So with that in mind, go ahead and proceed on this.
Okay, on the short segment, just real quick, though, if you would like to get a copy of the book, you can go to My God, I'm Hit, mygodimhit.com, and you can order the book there. You can either get it through a PDF or you can go out, do it through a printed book. The next event, actually I'm going to do real quick two events. Number one is that I was an intern at the Dallas Times Herald as a photographer, and I got pulled into a special assignment by somebody else that was not with a newspaper, and it ended up being an assignment of taking pictures in the school book depository. And so I had a 500 millimeter lens pulled out and pointed out the window of where supposedly Oswald was. And
it's almost again, like you were drawn into this thing from day one.
I know. It's just like, and again, I didn't plan on this, and I had always been sort of I stayed away from the whole conspiracy things. I was just like, oh, okay, I knew there was something different, but I was not at all a conspiracy nut, and I was not into, the whole thing about investigating and that type of thing. I was just sort of distanced from it. But
it's
I
not like you're a little bit even apolitical, not real.
Right.
But go on.
Mm-hmm. So, again, now I saw this from seeing that, there was no way that anybody shot anybody from that window, at least not the fatal shots. And so then the next thing was that there was a reporter by the name of Mary Alice Kimmery. She worked in Hollywood for years and had all of these contacts. Then she changed her name from Mary Alice Kimmery to Linda Goodman. And Linda Goodman then wrote a whole bunch of astrology books. And, in fact, it was one of the very few books that was per se metaphysical that sold $1 million. And because of she had all these contacts in Hollywood and politicians and then from her astrology books and et cetera, and I got to know her, and then she was the one that first said it to me. Well, said, yes, she matter-of-factly, in fact, it was really weird. We were sitting there talking, and matter-of-factly, she said, oh, you know, he wasn't killed. He was shot in the shoulder, and it was all faked. And then they took him off to the Russian-speaking part of Poland. And I, again, when I heard that, I just went, you're a nut job. You're crazy. And about that same time, I also then heard, which I had never heard before, the statement made by Roy Kellerman to both the FBI and to the Warren Commission, which is now the title of the book, My God, I'm Hit. He had heard Kennedy shout, My God, I'm Hit. I again put 1 + 1 = 2, and that is the Warren report says the bullet went from his neck out his throat. And, of course, when it's doing that, it's ripping all types of cords. I also then, through a weird set of circumstances, again, got involved in this thing with Charles Baxter, who is the rotating surgeon. He would never talk about the assassination whatsoever. We can get into that a little bit later on.
Yeah.
But he then stated that they put a trach tube right down the bullet wound hole that was in the throat. And so anybody having that, there's no way that they're going to be able to talk, nevertheless shout, My God, I'm hit. So when she said that, and then here comes this other information about the My God, I'm hit, and then I triangulated that with, well, wait a minute, the Warren Commission said that it went through the throat. And as far as I know, I am the very first investigator. I have never read anybody ever questioning and putting those, putting the two things together of My God, I'm hit. Well, how does a man with a bullet wound through his throat say that, shout that?
Much less
than
anything.
That was what started a lot of it.
He couldn't even have said, oh, shit, excuse me.
Right, yeah, he couldn't even breathe. He would have been sitting there, you know, grasping at his throat, and eyewitnesses do not say anything about the throat, and that's where we'll get into the whole, that gets into the meat and potatoes also.
Yeah, the
whole thing is that about the Zapruder film and et cetera, and since we got this short segment, but again, that kind of turned my head, is that my first reaction was, Linda, you're crazy. But then it was a couple of days later, it was just a bizarre thing again, is here comes this other statement at me, and then coordinated that with the Warren Commission and what she said, and that then stuck in, and this is back in the 90s, and I went, okay, well, you know, maybe there is something to this. Maybe he only was shot in the shoulder. What proof would there be that he was shot in the shoulder? And then that's when I really started getting into the investigations. I really turned my investigative skills towards this, and the proof there is overwhelming. And we'll get into that here in the other segments.
Yeah, and I get into what you found was the loose thread, and as you know, one loose thread takes apart the whole tapestry if you work at it. And you found that loose thread. A person shot in the throat cannot say anything, much less yell, My God, I'm hit. We'll be right back after these messages with Brian David Anderson and a totally unique look into the JFK demise. Stay tuned here on RBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Superbeta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Superbeta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, call 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848. With Superbeta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the Superbeta Prostate banner to learn more about the product.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johnglia.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johnglia.com.
And now we return to When Worlds Collide here on RBN. We're doing our special show with author Brian David Anderson, who wrote the, I believe, definitive book on taking a true second look at what happened to JFK 45 years ago this coming Saturday. And we've been outlining a little bit about Brian's background, mainly about how he came really unwittingly into this unique and in-depth investigation into what happened to John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who not long before that had given, I believe at the Waldorf Astoria, a very interesting and revealing conspiracy speech, as some people call it, in his clear Boston accent, which I've listened to many times. Pretty amazing that a president would make a speech like that, to think that one of the presidential occupiers of the Oval Office or even a president-elect would say such things today is almost farcical and comical, because we know it's not going to happen. But JFK, despite his playboy proclivities, was, in his own way, a rather brave guy. Certainly, he had an independence streak like many Irish do. And anyway, Brian, in this segment that we're in now, we need to get into the nitty-gritty, including June DeShong's diary, George D. Morenchild's links with Abraham Zapruder, and the things that really start making the official tapestry of what happened unravel. And let's go there. So the car's rolling down Elm Street. A person, JFK, is supposedly hit through the throat from behind and yet manages to yell out something, even though that tissue in his throat would have been torn apart. That's the thing that really sort of got you going. And it just gets weirder from there, doesn't it? Just go ahead and walk us through that.
Well, yeah, again, so that's supposedly the official. But now we go back to the eyewitnesses. And there's a...
There's like six of them, right?
Yeah, but there's also the two key witnesses.
Two of those
closest
six, right.
To Kennedy,
right.
To JFK, is a woman by the name of June Deshong, and also the closest other witness that is not family or whatever is Roy Kellerman.
Yes.
And so Roy Kellerman makes the statement that he hears the words, "My God, I'm hit."
And he's the Secret Service agent in the passenger front seat of the LOX.
Yes. You know, okay. Mm-hmm. Glad you defined that now. And so he turns, and he's in that left or right seat, and he turns over to his left to look at JFK because he heard that distinct Boston accent shout those words, "My God, I'm hit." He turns, and he sees now the left hand of Kennedy grabbing towards his right shoulder.
From behind.
Yes, so he's trying to grab towards the back of his left shoulder with his left hand.
His right shoulder.
And that's what he's saying, "My God, I'm hit."
Right, the back of his right shoulder with his left hand, putting his arm around his back.
So if you're just sitting there doing that, just imagine that you're Kennedy and you've now taken your left arm or left hand and you've put it on your back. Okay, so which indication is that you've been shot in the right shoulder.
Yeah.
Now, if you got shot in the throat, would you be grabbing towards your left shoulder?
Your right shoulder.
No, your right shoulder. No, you would not. And so he grabs to the left. Now, the key thing is to turn this into a stereo viewpoint. Now we have Kellerman seeing this right shoulder being grabbed by the left hand. Now, the key thing that coincides with this gives a stereo viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Is the diary of June Deshong. She is now in her 20s. She goes to downtown Dallas. She now exits the Elm Street after the whole incident occurs, and she immediately sits down and writes in her diary. One of the most key aspects of this whole, and it's the Rosetta Stone as far as I'm concerned. Now she puts the diary away, and it's never questioned by the Warren Commission. You can see her standing in the Zapruder film, so it's authenticated. This is not, you know, conspiracy. Somebody didn't make this up.
Right. She was there, and she wrote it down.
I have that in the book, a picture of the book, and you can see her standing. She's now standing approximately 15 feet away from JFK.
Yes.
Now, in the book, the diary, this also has a history to it, is that an individual by the name of Rubino. If I'm pronouncing his name correct, it's a French-speaking name, and he's American, but he finds out about this diary. So what does he do? He now then arranges for the diary after June Deshong dies in 1998. The family donates it to All Places, the Sixth Floor Museum.
Yeesh. Uh-huh.
And so that's like putting it into a black hole.
Yeah.
But I'm now going through searching websites. I'm now putting together the whole book and looking for things, et cetera, and I find this really obscure website, this Rubinow had, but we're back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I started doing this. This was an old website that looked like it was something that was put up in 1996. He had never changed it. It didn't have, you know, it was like one of those old websites.
Yeah, very,
a lot of
very.
People then just, you know, fling past it. And, okay, I just started going down on the files, because that's all it was the page was nothing but links to other files. So I started going down, and I then it said June Deshong's diary, and he describes it a little bit, and then I read her diary. I read the entire diary, and then I said, okay, and I saved the link, and then I kept on going. Then it was one of those things, you know, like, it's like you read it, and you don't get it in the beginning. And then I went to another page, and it was about 10 minutes later, man, it hit me like a hammer. I went, wait a minute, what? I went back to her diary. And here is the key thing, is that she hears the shot ring out, and the book it says that his arm fell off the side of the car.
His right arm.
His right arm fell off the side of the car. So now we have a stereo viewpoint.
Roy Kellerman sees
Deshong.
Yes.
What's that?
Roy Kellerman sees JFK's left hand go behind his back to his right shoulder. She provides the other side of the stereo and sees his right hand relax or go limp off the right side of the limousine.
And he can't see that, see? And she can't see him because the way down the angle, bang, and now she's moving. She can't see his left arm go towards his right shoulder. So they provide the stereo viewpoint of what either one of them couldn't see this now stereo.
And two people that don't know each other at all corroborate each other or provide balance to each other, you might say.
What's key about this is not something that somebody speaking on, like on a, that went up and did a testimony afterwards. Here we have a diary that was done moments after. So there was no alteration. She saw exactly what she's, and she was a big diary writer. People, that her relatives said that she kept a diary every day, and she was big into it.
She was used to writing down details that you and I wouldn't think about writing down. She was the first journalist, if you will, on the scene.
Exactly.
The true journalist.
Secretary for one of the offices up there. And so, but she kept this diary. That was what's so, and then you, of course, now we have the testimonies of Kellerman, both to the FBI and to the Warren Commission, and he repeats again exactly what he does change on his, from his FBI testimony to his Warren Commission testimony, is he does not say that he sees the left hand go to the right shoulder. By that time, they had to coordinate everything, and he said he grabbed his throat. Well, now there's a contradiction there. He tells the FBI one thing, and he tells the Warren Commission the other. But he is the only witness, though. Now we back up from these two witnesses.
Okay, we have
the other witnesses.
Yes, we have the stereo view of the two people closest. Okay, and now we have to let's move forward to the other witnesses, but quickly include how the Zapruder film does not at all coincide with what these reliable witnesses said.
Well, that's where, again, basically you have a gentleman who's sitting up on the left corner there. You have another family. You have these, and I have put that in the book. You back up from this.
Yeah.
But the key thing about this is not one person sees and grabs his throat.
Including a black gentleman on the, I believe, fifth floor of the depository.
Nobody sees that. They only see him slump in his chair and his arm fall off, his arm go limp. They see him going limp.
And yet,
see him making this quick jerking movement up to his hands, his hands to his throat.
So nobody sees what the film shows.
Exactly. Not one eyewitness then collaborates what's on the Zapruder film. Not even Zapruder himself. And that's even more bizarre, is that supposedly then Zapruder contradicts his own film. So the question being is, and this is where Jack White, I bring this up in the book, and he's brought it up many times before, is that there is a still picture that shows Zapruder up there, but he doesn't have his camera towards up his eye. He's watching it, which means is the film wasn't even taken by Zapruder.
Interesting. Okay, that one I don't remember right off.
Yeah, go back into the book and look at what Zapruder said. And he said, he grabs it. Now how, because a man who had vertigo, and we get now into Zapruder himself, he had vertigo, his secretary was holding him by the feet. He supposedly now has his eye into this one thing, and he supposedly sees all these things happen by his eye into the camera, and which is just totally impossible.
Which is hard to do even with modern cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
You're so fixated on operating the camera that you don't see things in the normal way without, as you would without one.
Having been a photojournalist and a videographer for many years, I totally collaborate with that thought. And that way of thinking is that you many times don't see anything. When I've been taking pictures and going through things, especially when you're doing a motion picture, you don't really see all the nuances. You're just trying to keep it in frame and to make sure you come back with something good, that you don't get your rear end kicked by the editor. So you just want to frame it, and that's it. And you're not thinking about what you're seeing.
The significance here is the stereo views of June DeShong and the Secret Service agent Kellerman, the other witnesses who were most close, whose statements we actually have. And you have all these people seeing reality happening. Now, a lot of people would come back and say, well, cameras don't lie. A camera has no prejudices. But if then the infamous cameraman, Abraham Zapruder, is admitting to, how did you phrase it, not actually being the cameraman, how would you?
Well, again, is that he, if you look at the testimony, I have it in the book, go back and look at the testimony of Zapruder. And he describes that Kennedy grabs his chest. He doesn't grab his throat, but he grabs it. And his testimony totally contradicts what's in the film.
Okay, and
so that's another thing is that Jack White, as I said before, there's some still pictures they came up with, and they contend that here's Zapruder with his camera down and not even looking through the viewfinder
at the car. At the point of the so-called shooting.
Yeah, and even then, even if it wasn't at the point of the shooting, is even at any moment where he'd have the camera down, that means, look at the Zapruder film, when it starts all the way off, is supposedly the cameraman has, you know, got the camera going all the way as the car is coming down, and there'd be no way. You could see all sorts of movement if he did that, and so there's lots of good evidence that Zapruder himself didn't even shoot the film. And
okay,
most likely, again, highly recommend, there's a Jack White a film, look that title up. The name is Jack White. He has a great film out, and basically he goes in a scientific type of manner, is that probably this was what's called a double mat, where they took the street first with one camera. You know, they took a first sweep of it, and then they came as the camera, as the car went by, they did another sweep, and they put the two of them together.
Okay, and this is, you can Google this, the Jack White film, right?
Isn't right, that, exactly.
Of the Zapruder, or alleged Zapruder footage.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Now, we got a couple minutes before the break. What I want to get drive home here for the rest of the show, well, in part, is that we need to get into Zapruder's relationship with one George Demorenchild, because it shows how, or I guess I could say why, that Zapruder himself is not a real credible person in one sense, and also how he's not just sort of your happenstance passerby or typical pedestrian, but in fact he had some linkages with Demorenchild that shows Zapruder could have been at the very least some sort of unwitting tool or some sort of foil in this whole thing.
Yes, and this person, Demorenchild, Russian, all different types of connections to intelligence agencies. He was also part of the Dallas Council on World Affairs, the Crusade for Agencies. They're all CIA ops.
Yeah, and your typical globalist. Yeah, the World Affairs Councils are CFR, basically Council on Foreign Relations affiliates throughout the nation. But there's one here in Washington. They're Dallas. They're all over the place, Chicago, right. San Antonio. But, yeah, go on.
And so then you have, but see, they're all members of this. That's why they're, including Zapruder. You also had Colonel Byrd. He was the owner of the School Book Depository, good friend of Demorenchild's and also of Zapruder's. It goes on and on.
The owner of the Texas School Book Depository is a good friend of Demorenchild and, okay.
And then also Demorenchild, here's even something even more, you know, crazier, is that he dated Jackie Kennedy's mother.
Whoa.
And so
the man that dated Jackie Kennedy's mother knew Abraham Zapruder as well as the owner of the Texas School Book Depository. So
yeah.
What that says is a man, Demorenchild, with intelligence connections, had the, I guess you could say, a way of coordinating or manipulating things to where he could maybe put the right people in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and then also, too, as even gets more bizarre, Demorenchild breaks up with Jackie Kennedy's mother and then goes out and almost gets married to Jackie Kennedy's sister, or, you know, Jackie Kennedy's mother's sister, his aunt, her aunt.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, the connections are just bizarre. And then you also have Demorenchild's wife, who is also then connected to two individuals, Ruth Payne, and it just goes on and on, interconnections.
Yeah, not to go too far on the Demorenchild thing, but before the break comes up pretty quick on us here, his connection to Zapruder, and if we get cut off, we'll continue a little bit with it. What, in simple terms, what was his linkage or association with Abraham Zapruder?
I believe, again, that Demorenchild recruited Zapruder as the patsy.
He
had some film things, and he said, okay, you know, we're going to get – I think he was informed that there's going to be something happening. There was, again, as supposedly as Zapruder did his film, and he sat down, and he leaned up against – he came off the little pedestal he was on, and his secretary – said, she heard him say, they killed him, they killed him, they killed him. Now, they.
Yeah.
And so I believe that, again, he was, in some ways, he was recruited. He probably was given some of the information,
not all of it. He didn't understand his whole role. Again, he was compartmentalized.
But again, the key thing was to be there with camera in hand.
Right, exactly. And then they slipped him another film, and then that's the film that supposedly got developed.
Right. Now, you were saying that there was a loss of custody of the film roll out of his camera, correct?
Right, right. Again, is that it supposedly went over to the Kodak film. But which was interesting, though, is that now the quote FBI agent comes in, and what do? They take Zapruder for this tour of, because they want to go supposedly get the film developed at WASA Studios.
Okay, hold that thought, Brian. We'll be right back after these messages with another segment and then some more messages at the top of the hour. Stay tuned here on RBN. We'll be right back.
Are clear. The worldwide economic collapse is here. The military is being positioned for martial law. The mark of the beast is at hand. Governments are calling for a new world cashless economic system. Having a long-term food solution is your only hope to stay free. Now, Survivalist Seeds introduces their Escape the Beast Kit. 24 varieties of all-natural, non-genetically modified heirloom seeds. For true patriots and homesteaders wanting food insurance. That's over 5 pounds of rare historic seeds for a penny per seed. 15,000 seeds that will feed a family healthy food for 7 years. Big John Lipscomb, host of Don't Tread on Me, is including an instructional DVD that will teach you how to earn big money selling the produce from his incredible heirloom seeds back to him, restaurants, and small delis. Don't buy from copycats. Their fancy packaging is not free. Order today before it's too late. SurvivalistSeeds.com. That's SurvivalistSeeds.com. A long-term food solution.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, fen, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on to the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
Okay, we now return to exploring the JFK assassination 45 years ago this Saturday from a very unique and new angle, refreshingly new, I believe. I think you can only chase the bullet around Dealey Plaza so many times, and if you accept the premise that the powers that be give you, that's all you're going to do is chase the bullet around. And this show, I think, is breaking new ground here, giving a lot more credibility and an open mind to the thesis of Brian David Anderson, our guest today, who's the author of My God, I'm Hit, where we're looking at the Kennedy assassination not with the premise or conclusion that we've been force-fed, but with an open mind and trying a different deduction, and that was this a abdication by fake assassination, which may sound amazing at first, but what we've outlined so far is that what is seen on the infamous Zapruder film and what the most reliable witnesses saw are two different things. So which is it? In reality, it's either one thing or another. Only one thing could have happened that day. Not all theories are the same. Not all opinions have equal credibility, even though everyone has a right to their opinion. We have to follow the facts, and we have to take a fresh look at these things. And the facts don't add up. And we've been talking about the events on Elm Street, and we're getting to the top of the hour pretty soon. We just have a couple minutes, and then we'll have a longer segment, and we'll be able to plow ahead here. But, Brian, the point that we left off before this last break was the linkages of George de Morenchild with the film man Abraham Zapruder. Without beating that to death, it's safe to say that the reason the film contradicts the main witnesses is because, if I may jump ahead a little bit, is the film was a setup that could be doctored so people would see the wrong version of reality and the right version of reality would be flushed down the memory hole. That's basically what you believe happened, correct?
Thing of it being a psychological operation along just with, you know, a challenge, could they pull this off? And Zapruder was one of those components where de Morenchild recruited him, probably gave him partial information, like they do a lot of people. And then what happens is, you know, they slip him this other film. He supposedly is going to go develop this film. It may not even have been the real film. But
right.
They do this parade around WFA-TV. And then Zapruder goes on live television and then gives, of course, the Warren Commission type of details, which he couldn't have seen through the viewfinder whatsoever. And the bullet, you know, coming to the head and that type of thing. And so he was basically an operation all the way through.
So de Morenchild only knew what he needed to know and had that limited involvement that de Morenchild would have needed to use him as the so-called credible film man on the scene. He's the real witness. Don't worry about eyewitnesses. This is the guy who has the goods. Look, he's even saying, he's even speaking the party line, the official story himself, because, hey, he filmed it.
Right.
And then we're all supposed to rush to that version of what happened.
Yeah, but then you look at the connections Zapruder had to all the participants, and you go, oh, wait a minute, you know, was he partly patsy? And I believe that he ended up dying of brain cancer. And there, I believe there's a big link between pressure and emotions and that type of thing. And I really believe that that the lie that he knew he was living, that he got sucked into,
got the best
I believe was a contributing factor probably to his health condition.
I think so, too. And we have another hour to go here on a second refreshing look at what happened in those terrible events 45 years ago. We'll be right back here at RBN with another hour with Brian David Anderson. Please stay tuned.